I heard that you're never supposed to share the stage with an animal or a little kid. Can I get a little combination of both of you? So, when we talk about financial planning, remember before my son came up here, we were talking about the secret, which doesn't seem like a secret, it just seems like something that's been around a long time, now somebody else has made billions of dollars, just something changing a little bit. When we talk about financial budgeting and personal planning, I've repeated the idea that you've got to have your goals. We showed you the Crown Financial Ministries map that showed the little benchmarks that you can get as you try to achieve your goals, like saving $1,000, start paying down your consumer debt, like your credit card, pay off your home loan, pay for your kids' education. Those things, those benchmarks that we're going to try to achieve on the way to our final objective, which is to be good stewards of our money that we've been entrusted with. By putting those things out there, what we're saying is that these things are important, and we're going to take them out of the subconscious of our mind, and we're going to put them in the conscious of our mind. So that in our day-to-day interactions with money, as we're going through the checkout line and we see that candy bar that might not be in the grocery budget necessarily, we're going to say, you know what? I remember that my goal for this month was to save up $1,000 in case of a rainy day, and I'm not sure that this Snicker bar really fits into that paradigm. Okay? So by bringing these goals to the forefront, into the conscious, hopefully those things are there, so that we make better decisions, just like the ideas.
I think you put it in your paradigm, that Snicker bar.
I don't try to pop jokes during your sermons.
That's because you respect him.
Oh, all you can tell him there's a hierarchy of needs.
So you all should have an outline. If you don't have an outline, you came in late. The outline and the handouts are on the front pew. So all you people that came in late. I made 30 copies, and it looks like I'm running low. So, put these four at the back. Oh, yeah, Pastor Schroeder.
Keep it away.
Let me come right here.
Sit close to somebody if you don't have one at this point, because I think that was the last two copies that we had. But we can photocopy more. So the first thing on there is review. We just talked about the goal setting, putting those goals out there so that you know what you're trying to achieve, so that when you're making financial decisions, you can look at them in light of the goals that you're trying to achieve. And then we talked about 2 weeks ago that first expense category. That first expense category, as money stopped by the house money came by the house the other day, author wrote, we look at it, God, Caesar, you. And you're looking at the ideas of your tithe, your first expense or your output of money. Your taxes, you've got to pay them unless you want to go to prison. Unless you've got a really good CPA. And I know
his phone number.
I'm not that guy. And then third, you need to start putting something aside for you, because the only way that you're really going to start getting out of the cycle of kind of like living on yesterday's cash is if you start putting some away, consciously saving a little bit. So we covered that last time. We're going to move on this time to the expense category number two, which are called necessities. Now you see a list of 8 necessities that are up here. And these are things that we kind of need to survive. A place to live, food to eat, clothes to wear. Now, if you lived in San Diego very long, you can see that a lot of people get by without a lot of clothes to wear.
Where do you go looking?
Yeah, I live close to the beach. I don't look necessarily. Cars, transportation, things of that nature, they're listed here. Now, I've had conversations with people. I had somebody that I was working with, and I sat down, and we started talking about what it is that you need to survive. What is your survival number as far as your expenses are concerned? So your mortgage payment, your food every month, maybe the extra things like the clothing, the things that are on this list. Your Snicker bar, depending on your consumer habits. And I knew what it was for Betsy and I, and we were kind of talking about that as I'd gone into business for myself. Like, what was the minimum amount that we needed to pay the Redfern family in order to not get forced out of our home? And we were talking about that number. He came back to me, and his number was in the five digits, meaning something over $10,000 a month. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, how is that possible? And he started telling me about the $1,500 a month car payment, the $10,000 mortgage, the $1,000 that he has to put in escrow every month for his property taxes. And I start, it's like two different worlds. You know, it's like an alien had come down and was working with me, and I'm like, man, take me to your leader. But what I came away with from that conversation was that even though these are quote-unquote necessities, there are different levels of necessity. And we need to determine which level we're living at. In the Crown Financial Ministries workbook, they call it the tuna, shrimp, or lobster decision. So you're going to go out and you're going to have seafood. You need to make the decision. Is it going to be tuna, which is fairly inexpensive, shrimp, or is it going to be lobster? Or in the Redfern household, is it going to be the tuna that Paul buys or the white albacore tuna in water that Betsy buys? Because there's like three times as much. I don't care that it looks like cat food. If it's not called cat food, I'm going to eat it. I haven't been allowed to grocery shop since then, so. I'd written it down, so it was in the forefront of my mind. It was a conscious decision. So, how do we determine what we're gonna have? Are we gonna do the tuna? Or are we gonna do the lobster? How do we come to a determination of those things? And I suggest that there's two basic ways. I'm sure that there are more, but I'll suggest two. The first is you can have a guideline. If you're a person that wants to get into a program, here is a program that's developed based on your income amount. And this is for a family of four, but if you're a family of one or a family of six, I've got sheets that I could probably make a copy for you as well. This is Crown Financial Ministries' percentage of your income that you should allocate to these different areas that we've listed here. I think that's fine if that's the way that you want to do. What I find more profitable is going back to your goals. So you make the determination, what are your goals? What would you really like to see accomplished? And you can go down these things and you can start whittling down those things that aren't that significant. My family, growing up, we had some great friends. My mom, who's a runner as well as some other people in my family, she used to run with the mom, and the daughter was my age. And so the two families spent a lot of time together. My friend's mom, she didn't like to eat anything. She would go around, she would drink Diet Coke all day long, and it would get to dinner time. I mean, we'd been out on the lake, we'd been running around. Everybody would just be ready to chow down. And for her, it didn't matter if it was a bologna sandwich on Wonder Bread or if it was a prime rib steak. She said it didn't taste that much different to her. Now, Pastor Schroeder will tell you that's just insanity. But if that's the way that you're wired, if you don't have taste buds and you're like, it's all the same to me, then you might just say, you know what, this percentage as far as food is concerned is a little bit different than what I need to do, because I can really cut back on my food consumption, because I could eat something cheap like ramen noodles all day and be completely content. But it comes down to, where do you want to focus your energy and what are the things that you want to accomplish? And really, does buying lobster versus tuna help you achieve those goals that you're really shooting for? You know, some people are at the age and stage in their life where they're like, you know what? I really want to accomplish my goals. I'm taking care of my tithing. I've got offerings and things that I want to do with my money. But it's important to me that I eat a certain way. Or, you know what? I collect wines or something of that nature. And, you know, that's fine today. If you've been faithful with the use of your money, we're not saying that everybody needs to go out and buy tuna. We're simply stating you need to look at these in light of your goals. And is it really a wise decision or is it not? So, here we are, the famous action items that we bring up, or at least I've brought up the Sundays that I've been teaching. If you want to take the challenge, you can fill in your monthly income statement based on the expense priorities and identify necessities that are not helping you achieve your goal. So you guys should all have formats from past Sunday schools that we taught with little budgets that you can fill in. If not, I think that they might either be on the website or we can distribute them electronically. But there are some copies that are out there, and if you don't have one, you can come see me. But you can start filling that in and start looking at those things and look at them versus the percentages that Crown Ministries has provided. Any questions, thoughts, complaints? Excellent. It's a great crowd. Point two, discretionary. Now, if you've gotten through the priority one expenses and your priority two expenses and you still have money left over, you're at the discretionary part of your income. Now, I think that we alluded to it a little bit, but there are a lot of priority two expenses that kind of start sneaking into priority three expenses. It's kind of the Lexus versus the Toyota idea. You know, if you're a Toyota person, you know you're getting quality, reliable foreign automobile and you're going to drive it for however long. That's your mode of transportation and that's great. But if you're saying that part of your discretionary income is going to be used to upgrade that Toyota to a Lexus, well then really, you know, you're kind of going down into, that's just a desire, that's a want that you're kind of upgrading. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Just pointing out. So there's a lot of things that kind of slide down from the priority two to the priority three. And these are things, the extra things that we spend money on just to spend money to, why do we do it? I don't know. Probably to get married. And then after that, to stay married. Like haircuts, health and beauty, right at the top. So, with this category, there needs to be a game plan. And the game plan really comes down to bringing out historically what it is that you're spending money on in all three categories, but especially this one. Comparing it to either a standard that Crown Financial Ministries come up with, or maybe if you're working with somebody as kind of a financial coach or getting some financial counseling, some numbers that they would put down for you and your family, or... And then once you have those numbers, that framework, what you're dealing with, analyze and decide where you can cut back and what changes that you can make if you're not reaching your potential and your goals. MSN.com, which is a news, entertainment, pop culture website by Microsoft, they have a link to Money. Money Magazine puts articles online. And they had one last week on there about a woman that had lived in 2007 on a total of $11,000 for the year. Single woman. She'd gone back to school. And she wrote about all the things that she did to survive on a little less than $1,000 a month. She paid her own rent. She bought her own food. She was completely self-sufficient. And the title of the article was $11,000 a year surviving, actually thriving. And it went through all the things that she did and how she could survive on basically less than $1,000 a month. And she had a rent on there, which was over half of her monthly expense. It was about $600. But going to things like buying food from the food bank. Or she was a college student, so clothes, it wasn't like she needed business suits necessarily. But, you know, she'd wear just t-shirt and jeans. Day in and day out. But if she really, really needed something, you know, she would go and she would negotiate. Like, that's something that we don't necessarily do a lot of in the United States, but she would go in and, is that the best you can do for me? And then she'd keep working it. And a lot of times she found that people were willing to give her price breaks. But wherever we're at, we just need to make the decision, like, what are the priorities, and analyze exactly what we can do to make sure that we're on the way or on the path to where we need to go. Okay. Any questions about that? This is going to be one of my favorite parts right here. Page 2 of the outline. Tips for keeping and living by a budget. Now, at any point, you guys that have been living on budget and have ideas, feel free to throw them out there, because a lot of these I found online. There's a You Need a Budget website. It's a CPA out of Dallas or the Dallas area, and he has a 10-day online program that you can do. I like signing up for these things just to see what I agree with and what I don't. So I went through his 10-day program and kind of bullet pointed out some of the things that he put on there. Some of these things are from a gentleman named Dave Ramsey. He's got a website and a financial radio show. Lots of things that are out there. There's lots of resources that are available. And, you know, just kind of honing what it is that works for you is a great thing. The number one step in keeping these budgets is really, if you're married, sitting down with your spouse and saying, both of you buying in. So if there are things that are going to be roadblocks to trying to keep your budget, if you're going into it, and I know a lot of times as a husband, I mean, if I get it in my head, then for some reason I think that Betsy's just going to go along with it. You know, so all of a sudden we're racing along in one direction, and Betsy, what are we doing? I'm like, oh, you know when we talked about doing this thing? No. I was like, but you're excited about it, right? No. So I think we all face that in different areas. If you can sit down and make the decision that this is something that's important to both of you, and this really comes back to where your goals are. I mean, if you're not buying into the goals together, then you're not going to have much point or much hope of achieving the objectives of your budget. But sitting down and really making an agreement that that's something that you're going to do. The Crown Financial Ministry stuff, if you get their workbooks, they have like contracts that people sign, and you sign with your financial counselor, and you sit down and you say, I'm going to do this. And they're like quit claim deeds that I'm never going to use my credit card again. It's very serious. They want it to be very formal. It would be similar to going into a banking institution and trying to get a loan. I don't know if you need to go to that extreme with your family to try to achieve this budget or the budgeting goals. But it makes sense that you're going into it as a team and really making those decisions and having those discussions about what's going to work best for you, because it really comes down to who you are and how you work best. Okay. Number 2. This is a big one from You Need a Budget. When the gentleman that created this budgeting system and the software that goes along with it for You Need a Budget said that he and his wife started living on a budget when they were both master's students in college. And they would get frustrated because they would budget things that would be their expenses, but then he would get sick one day and he would miss his hourly job. Or, you know, he'd call in sick and he wouldn't get paid for those hours since he didn't go in. And so their income would be a little bit lower than they thought it was going to be in the past. And they kept having the variable income situation throwing off how much money they'd spent, because they were expecting to get more money in the door than what they actually got. And so they decided, you know what, we're only going to live off the money that we made last month. So what they did was they scrimped and they saved and they built up 1 month's reserve. And they put that in the bank, and that's what they budget off of. So if they had a month like the month of January, if they got to the end of January and they'd made less money than they had anticipated, well, it didn't blow their budget because that was the money they were going to spend in February. And they had time to game plan where they were going to skimp the next month to overcome that shortfall. So he knew that that would be difficult for a nation that has negative savings rate to come up with 1 month's salary or income in order to live off of next month. So he listed a number of helpful suggestions to build up 1 month's income. The one that I think, there are a number of things in here about saving money. The one thing that I thought was really clever that I don't hear a lot of people talk about is cashing in vacation time. As an auditor, I would go in and see people's companies' financials all the time. We'd do test work. And there would always be a couple people in the corporation that would be forfeiting vacation time because there was only a maximum accrual that they could get. And they'd get to the end of it, and they didn't want to go anywhere. Maybe, they live in San Diego. Shoot, why go on vacation? So they were just wasting that vacation time. There are a lot of companies that would, instead of just forfeit it, they'd say, you know what, we're going to pay you back for it. Unless you start taking it, you're going to do it. So there's a lot of companies that would be happy to accommodate people that were interested in selling their vacation time. So if you had accrued vacation time and you really felt like this was the only way that was a budget would work for you, that would be an easy way to get cash in the door. Similarly, if your credit card debt is a millstone around your neck at this point and you're saying, I can't build up cash to pay it off, this might be a solution where you say, you know what, that's an asset that has been accrued on your behalf by your company that you might be able to use to pay that down. There are a number of others in here. Don't buy Starbucks bottled water or soda. Don't do that. You need it?
Buy a machine, it pays off. That's what we did.
There's all sorts of things that you can do, Tim.
If a bottle of water yields less dental bills than soda, then that's worth it.
But San Diego County just started adding fluoride to the tap water.
There you go. There's
so that would yield even less cavities. This goes back to, you got to know yourself. If you're addicted to caffeine, Starbucks is the only way to get your fix. But I don't know what to tell you. You know, it's like Ray's example. The guy that would rather give up food than cut his cable. You know, you've got to make decisions here, and you got to cut back in some places if you really want it to start working. So make the decisions that are least painful for yourself. Because again, if you say, you know what, I'm just going to cut my cable subscription, and that's been your lifeline for the last 20 years, and you try to go cold turkey, well then your budget might not work simply because that was just too big of a sacrifice to go cold turkey on. We cut our cable 4 years ago, so. Okay. eBay. You know, the old school financial books, and I know Ray brought this up, the old school financial books, they'll say, like, have a garage sale or get neighbors together, have a neighborhood garage sale. Man, the junk that gets sold on eBay these days. Because if you have a garage sale, then you're kind of counting on the people in your immediate area being gullible or susceptible enough to scam to actually buy your junk off you. And then you're going to have to see them again. The beauty of eBay is there's just got to be one sucker someplace in the world. Okay, so, and you probably will never see him. So, do that. Number 3 and 4 kind of go together. Ray talked about not carrying cash with him. Herman brought up his use of credit cards in order to get the points or the rewards or whatever the incentives were, and he was able to pay those off every month. People go about this different ways. Dave Ramsey says that there's studies that have been done that say that if you spend cash, you're likely to spend 12 to 18% less at every transaction than if you spend with a credit card or a check, because it's painful for people to actually put that money down on the table and see it go away. This goes back to one of the first weeks I was here when Daphne talked about the envelope system. Dave Ramsey is a proponent of the envelope system, where you would have your budget, you would have envelopes for your different areas of expense, and you would actually put physical cash in those envelopes. Now you need to live in a good neighborhood because put cash in those envelopes, and then when you're going to the store, you would take the money out of the grocery envelope. You wouldn't take all your envelopes to the store. You'd just take out the cash that you had budgeted to use at the grocery store for that trip, and then you'd get there. And I was talking to another gentleman in my office complex, Tom, who... Christian guy, he seemed like he'd been really financially disciplined. he was just really a really great conversation with him about savings. And he's saying that last year he and his wife started doing this. And he was saying it was absolutely spot on true that they would spend less money when they were paying with cash. And he said the reason was because you'd go to the grocery store with $50 and you'd say, I need these 7 or 8 things. And when you went down the aisle and you saw that Snicker bar and you said, oh, that looks really good, the fear that you would go over the $50 amount and you'd only have $50 cash, and that embarrassment of being like, oh, can we just take that off with the people backed up in line behind you would just be too much. So I thought that was funny. I mean, it's a good story. One thing that I would recommend is if you go to that program, carry that little ledger that comes with your checkbook with you and still write out what you're spending the money on. Because what I find the problem is if I use cash for something and I sit down the next week or the end of the month to try to figure out where my money went, I don't really have that great of recall, especially down to the dollars and the cents of it. So I would recommend writing out on the check ledger how you spent your cash. I asked Betsy at the middle of this year to not use our debit card anymore at different transactions, partially because the retail establishments have to upcharge on their products to cover the merchant fees that Visa and MasterCard and everybody else charges them. So, you know, they have a cost incurred when you use a debit card versus when you pay with cash or check. But more because it was a good way of keeping track of things so we could see exactly what was what, because she was using that ledger. And she said it really was a pain in the neck because nobody uses checks anymore. And writing it out and filling out the check with those people building up behind you, you kind of felt like a cancer to society. And I said, that's great. That's motivation not to go to the store as much. So it was a win-win. We've transitioned now to where she does use the debit card, but she still writes it down in the ledger so that she has a running total of the amount of money that's going out. I think much like Ray, I'm the person in a relationship that only has like $1 or $2 cash in my wallet at any one given time, and I don't spend money whatsoever. So I keep saying Betsy does these things. I'm not saying I don't hold myself to the same standard. I'm simply saying I'm not allowed to spend money. Number 5 is where the rubber really hits the road. You know, Ray's probably going to touch on this a little bit next week. Not that you're teaching the whole entire class, Ray. I was just going to say, I was going to give you a moment to get up and correct what I've been saying over the last 3 or 4 weeks. But Ray talks about the simple budgeting techniques, like how do you stay on top of it and what things do you do? And he said in one of his prior classes that you could probably do it in about 20 or 30 minutes a month, right?
A week.
A week. Okay. Good, because we're on the same page. Because I've got on here number 5. Pick a day a week. You know, probably not Friday or Saturday night, but a day a week when you and or your spouse are going to sit down and you're going to get this stuff into your program, be it a paper program where you're going to start going through this, start totaling it, putting it into the categories, or a computer program like youneedabudget.com or Quicken or Microsoft Money, whatever it may be. You kind of need to get into that habit of saying that this is something you're going to keep up with, because when it gets a couple months behind, it's really a big task to try to make up those 2 hours that it's going to take to get all the data into the computer system. And sometimes you can download it from your bank. You can download information directly into software now, and that way all you have to do is assign it to expense accounts and you can't do that 6 months after the fact because the data's not there anymore. Number 6, once you get into this habit of establishing the budget and you've been working it and you've got those goals out there, you're going to find ways to really start making even further adjustments. This is the refinement process. The youneedabudget.com, the training class, one of the things that they write in there is you start assigning those excess dollars to some specific goal. So every dollar is working for you and your family, and you just determine how it's going to do that. So, for example, if you get to the end of the month and you've underspent on groceries, it's not, woohoo, let's go out to eat. It's, okay, now we've got this extra money. Let's assign it to paying off that credit card, or let's assign that to kids' education fund, or that kid's not looking too bright. Let's assign it to the new car. I mean, it really comes down to your kids. When you've got those 20 minutes a week that you're going through these things, it might be a good time to have those ongoing communications. We talked about point number one was, what are the things that are going to keep you or your family from maybe staying on track with these things? This would be a good time. Hey, how are things going? How do we feel about these things? You know, if things become a little bit too restrictive in the financial budgeting process, you might say, you know what? We need to have $20 a week of fun money. Honey, sweetie. Because this thing's just driving me nuts. And, you know, this is part of the refinement process too. Kind of just refining it to find out what is specifically working for you. In your planning, you're going to need to make sure that you're putting aside for those things that are not monthly expenses. You know, you don't want to get to December 10th and figure out that you've got half your property tax burden due and you haven't saved anything from it and then you're pulling off a credit card. You know, as a caveat and aside, having paid a couple property taxes on December 10th for myself and other areas, I was so happy to see on the back of the envelope in bold letters from the San Diego County Treasurer, "You can now pay your property tax bill with your credit card!" Exclamation point. Just go to... And I'm thinking to myself, you know, that's great. You know, people can't afford their property taxes, so hey, let's just pawn them off to the credit card agencies. But I don't know, maybe the county and the city are really excited about that. I mean, they seem to have done really well with their debt. So it's out there. The idea is, don't plan, just take care of it and pass the buck to make sure people become insolvent, because that'll help the county. Number nine is simply apply excess to a goal. If you're under in a category, take that extra money, apply it to a goal. If you go over in a category 1 month, though, I would recommend saying that you kind of need to reduce that expense the next month to make up for it. Does that make sense? So punish yourself if you're bad, and don't reward yourself if you're good. And that'll keep you motivated to continue. And then finally, you know what? This just brings peace and happiness. If you kind of figure out where you're going, you're better able to make decisions. It's not just the financial budgeting things. When you have your goals and you see yourself slowly working towards them, I think it's an exciting thing. As people start going out and, you know, I see this with people trying to find jobs. You know, sometimes you get the people that are they just need a job. I just need to get a job. And they're going out and they're sending out their resume via email to 6,000 companies or look at the classified ads. And then you have those other people that are like, you know what, I really want to have a job, but not just any job. I want it to be this kind of job. And they kind of refine like what that vision is for that job. And they look for those specific companies that are going to do those things that they really want to get better at and they think they can serve at and where their talents and their time and their energy could really best fit. And they go in there like a laser and they get in and you know what? Their employers are like, wow, that guy or girl is really great at this. Because that person had taken the time to say, you know what, this is what I'm good at and this is what I want to be doing. And they're excited employees or excited business owners if that's the case. Versus the other person that kind of goes, oh, well, you know, I just need a job. And then a couple months after getting a job, I'm like, oh, this job, just as bad as my last one. You know, so you kind of need a framework for anything that you're doing, but especially in finances. You know, set those goals, get those ideas, and say, these are the directions that we want to go. Complaints? Oh, yes, right here. Oh, question. I'll take those.
I wonder what your thoughts are on the reward program that all these credit cards offer. We last summer met a friend who was telling us about all the trips they took with all their points, and we went and looked at our credit cards. We never thought about points. We had like 100,000 points. So we had a vacation on our, you know, with the points. But then we actually started using the card for all the things like groceries and things that seemed financially sound. And yet, I mean, we paid it off, and it just sense that it's tempting to not, like you talked about using cash, not be in tune with what you're really spending. So I wonder what, from a financial planning standpoint, would they say just forget the rewards?
I don't do it.
You don't?
Personally,
yeah.
Because I don't think that it works well for me. And the credit cards wouldn't be offering it if it worked well for the majority of people. You know, it's kind of like Vegas. It's like, they know enough people are going to lose to cover up the people that win.
Sure.
Now, Herman brought up, said that he did that. Herman said they did that, and they get rewards from it, and that works well for them. The credit card company's just assuming that you're going to screw up, in my opinion. I mean, I've not sat down and interviewed any of those credit card people, but I assume that that's how they make the money. Gary.
You were talking about Dave Ramsey. You mentioned him
yes.
Here, but that's a big part of his education is that the majority of people using the credit cards just aren't as disciplined as Herman and Ellie are. Herman and Ellie are really frugal, but yeah, the credit card companies haven't figured out that they're making money even with giving that, you know, the frugal people that are really getting something back from them are the slim, you know, the slim number. Most Americans tend to spend more using the credit card, and Ramsey's proved this over and over, so.
It's a trap to get us hostage to Visa, MasterCard, Amex, and Discover. We're going to check with our legal team, see if there's any ramifications for me saying that before we post it on the website. Anything else before we wrap it up? Next week, we're going to talk a little bit about the income side of our budget, which should be fun. We got the pain out of the way talking about expenses, talk a little bit about income, and then do a little bit of wrap-up. And like I say, hopefully Ray will do us the honor of getting up here and correcting me. Yeah?
Just one more quick thing to add. And something that's started to work well for Katie and I is on this getting cash and envelopes is places like Ralph's and Costco will offer cash cards. So that rather than having this envelope has this much and this envelope has this much, it's like, oh, we need some cash. We can just pull it from any envelope.
Yeah.
We've got a specific card for Costco gas. A specific card for Ralph's groceries that we know, you know, for that month. So you can't go into another envelope, you know, should you be tempted to just go grab some cash.
So it's like a gift card? That,
yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Smart.
And for Tim, Starbucks does offer a card. So if you know what you spend each month, you can preload the card. And then when it's done, you got to wait until next month.
I mean, I seriously kept track. I have a really detailed budget. I always have. And I found out we had, I don't know, $200 Starbucks habit. It was ridiculous. So we bought the machine in about 3 months. It was paid off. We've been drinking our own coffee for 7 years since.
See, that sounds like...
It's way better. Yeah.
Sounds like a solution, whereas what Jeff was recommending sounded like aiding and abetting. Bill.
Thinking of this service this morning, in contrast to Ahab and the prophet, well, we're all prophets, and to God, for his children, these things are important. They're not just la-di-da, but we should get our head down between our knees and take seriously financial matters as well. Well, that's part of spiritual life.
Absolutely. We're stewards of the money, as Ray pointed out.
Not just God's 10%,
right.
But a lot of other things. It might end up being 20 or 30%.
True. Absolutely. And, you know, I think that I said it a few weeks ago, if you really want to know where your priorities are, and I think that the reason that Scripture talks so much about money is, just look at where you're spending it, because it gives a pretty accurate thumbnail sketch of where those priorities are. I will close this in prayer when you go downstairs. Lord, we thank you for your many blessings in our lives. We thank you for the responsibilities that you have given us and for the jobs and the work that you provide. We thank you for your provisions for our families and for this church. We ask that you would continue to work on us, that you would make us more heavenly minded, and that we would be set on those things that you would have us do. We ask this in Christ's name. Amen.